it feels like all of the things that I was really insecure about and that I wanted to hide or run away from have become my superpower. I am so eager to not only use that superpower, but like share it with every single person. The core of good Black art comes from like a very personal place, right? Like it comes from me growing up in a environment that was not conducive to what I was able to give, what I was able to create, what I was able to make. I had a lot of people around me supporting me, but they didn't have the tools or the words or the language to like coach me and to get me there. And there was no roadmap. I just had to figure it out. So my sense of urgency right now is I actually have all the tools. I have a roadmap and I have access to all of these young Black creatives around the world. And I just want to share it with them because my thinking is like, if you can figure out who you are and what your superpower is at 22 versus 32, imagine the change in your life. Imagine the decisions that you would make. Imagine how fast, you know, you would excel. Imagine what you could do in a year or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, just if you know that you have that superpower. So the sense of urgency for me and why I am so enthusiastic about good Black art is I know the power of someone who has quote unquote made it in quote unquote New York City, reaching out and encouraging you when you're in a small town in Georgia or in Colombia where there's no access to art, or a favela in Brazil. I mean, that's life-changing. Identifying talent, nurturing that talent, and helping them change their life and find success, whatever success looks like.
Dear friends and listeners, welcome to another awesome episode of Aligned by Design with me, JJ Acuna. Fall is here and Christmas is just around the corner, and there's so much in our world to be thankful for. First, we've made it through this year. I feel like I say that every year around this time, but it's true. If you've made it this far in 2022, well done you. It really was a make or break year for so many. And today in the hot seat, you get to meet a close and personal friend of mine, Mr. Phil Collins. No, not that Phil Collins, the pop legend of the 80s. No, my Phil Collins is an amazing person who I met for the first time in Hong Kong about a decade ago. And we've been very close friends ever since. Phil was an expat who worked in creative and marketing activations for American brands in mainland China. And he did all that as an African-American creative. We talk about his time in Asia. We also talk about how his make or break for 2022 was leaving the corporate world to start a business focusing on giving collectors access to good Black artists everywhere in the world, and giving good Black artists a platform to showcase their works and sell their works to collectors everywhere as well. He speaks of entrepreneurship, Asia, being a Black creative, and of how gratitude gives him space between all the craziness of being a self-made entrepreneur. Born and raised in Tennessee, studied in Brazil, worked in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East for nearly 10 years, and now based in New York City, Phil Michael Collins is a passionate collector, marketer, and founder of Good Black Art. Good Black Art is a global platform centered around the most promising Black emerging artists, which sells original artworks, creates press opportunities for artists, and develops partnerships and exhibitions. Philip's mission as an art entrepreneur is to be a mentor to artists and collectors through sharing his learnings of collecting art and highlighting untold Black narratives from around the world. We welcome Philip Michael Collins to the table.
to my listeners, if I sound a lot more relaxed on this podcast episode, is because Phil and I have been friends for how many years? 10 years?
At least, yeah. It's been a minute.
I'm 42. Oh, was I supposed to say that out loud?
I'm 36 now.
Yes, and I met you when you were like 27, 28.
I was young. Ooh. Yeah, I was like in my 20s.
So you and I lived in Hong Kong together for a good few years.
Right.
And right. You were working corporate.
Right.
So and you were in Shanghai for 10 years, though.
So. I went to Shanghai in 2009. I graduated from college in 2008. Went to Shanghai early 2009. Was there for about 5.5 years and then moved to Hong Kong and was in Hong Kong for like 4-ish years, something okay. like that.
So when I said 10 years, I meant 10 years in Asia altogether. So a combination of mainland China and Hong Kong for you.
Right.
African-American male with a big afro in China. What was it like being a queer, creative African-American male from the South living in mainland China with a big afro? What was that experience like?
I am asked this question often, and the way I answer it, and I think today, 36 years old, back in the U.S., I'd say that it was actually pretty similar to the way that I grew up as a queer Black kid in the South. I was always an outsider. I was always the only one. So going to China for me actually wasn't that much of a difference in terms of like who I was. I would say that if anything, living in Asia as a queer Black man with a big ass afro, I felt freer because there was no context to any of it. It just was like, I'm existing in this place, I'm thriving professionally and personally, and I'm an American, right? I think expats have like a different kind of privilege when we go abroad. And I think I experienced that privilege. And ultimately, I think that privilege was really beneficial to me for that period of time.
Were you thriving in your job and your career in China and Hong Kong?
Yeah, I think I was. I went to university for international marketing, and my goal was to work abroad. That was like my number one goal, was to get out of the U.S. and experience something bigger than, you know, and greater than what I was taught, right? Like most people were like, oh, I'm going to move to Atlanta, or I'm going to move to Charlotte, or some people are like, I'm moving to New York. And not saying that I didn't try those things or want to do those things, I just felt like there was something more. So to go to China, get a dream job at a, you know, at a great agency, doing all kinds of, you know, integrated marketing, social and events and branding, architectural work, design work, it just was like it was a dream. So when I first started working for Imagination, I worked there for like 6 months, got a promotion. Then I, you know, worked for another year, got another promotion. It was just like promotion after promotion after promotion, bigger accounts, bigger budgets, more clients. And I did that for like 7 years straight. And it just, you know, it definitely prepared me to come back to the U.S. and to work here and also thrive in different ways. I would say that when you are an expat, you've had like certain experiences professionally, it does boost you in certain ways professionally that maybe if you were in the U.S., it may take a little bit longer because there's just so much more red tape from a hierarchy perspective.
Do you miss living in China and Hong Kong?
I live in New York now. I will say that there's a lot of things that I miss about living in Asia. I absolutely miss the efficiency of Asia, China and Hong Kong from an infrastructure perspective, which is so much more, I mean, it's so advanced compared to a city like New York, right? So just being in a city that functions and is clean and is efficient, I miss that because it adds a lot to your day. It adds a lot of stress if you can't, you know, get from point A to point B in a seamless manner. I miss the food for sure. Oh my God, I miss the food every day. And I certainly miss my friends because when you're in your 20s and early 30s, I think those are really formative years for friendships and relationships. So, you know, moving back to the U.S. was a major culture shock for me, a reverse cultural shock. And it was a really, you know, those first few years were very, very difficult for me to live here and to really
you were doing corporate
culture.
You're in the world of corporate America the U.S.
I was doing similar work. But I was working on the American Express account. I was leading American Express's global entertainment and music experiences and partnerships. And then I also was leading another team for American Express, Global Arts and Theater Partnership. So like in terms of like subject matter and in terms of, you know, the type of brand, I mean, it's a really great gig. But it was challenging for me to communicate with like my American colleagues. They did not like understand my thought process. You know, we talked about my hair earlier. What was fascinating about moving back to the U.S. was I remember walking into my office and walking to the American Express office with my afro at that time, and it was distracting, but like in a very different way. It was like, why do you have that? Like, what is this? So like, it was more negative. And obviously that's rooted in just a really brutal history of racism in the U.S., but particularly with black hair. So,
is that,
you know,
from,
if you remember,
non-blacks, or was that from blacks?
Definitely non-black people for sure.
Afro accepted in mainland China and Hong Kong, but not accepted in New York?
I think because of just like the historical context of racism and the relationship with hair in this country. You know, it's still a very controversial topic for Black people to wear natural hair in certain environments. So I cut my hair off month being back. I just was like, I'm not doing this. Like, this is like assault.
If you don't want this, you don't deserve it.
Yeah, I cut it off. And
that's horrible.
You know, it is horrible. And I mean, now looking back on it, you know, I don't know if I would have cut my hair or not, but I definitely had a lot of challenges moving back to the U.S. I would say the biggest challenge was that everything that I ran away from when I was 22 years old, I never really dealt with a lot of that trauma. So when I came back to the U.S., all that trauma came flooding back, and I was you know, 31, 32-year-old who had all this trauma and didn't have the words or the, you know, the language or the experience to really deal with it. And that's actually, you know, how I got into art, was because I needed some kind of outlet or some kind of creative therapy that I could retrace my steps, learn who I was, and properly heal. I don't know who I am, and I got to figure this out really, really quickly, because I knew I was, you know, I was in a very dark place for those first two or three years, really trying to figure out who I was, go with my life.
You left your corporate life. You left your corporate career to start Good Black Art. Was that a good decision? Or was that a tough decision?
I would say all of the above, right? Like, you know, I am one, if people, you know, the people who are listening and know me know that I love stability and comfort and security. Like, I love those things. Those are very important to me. But I'm also a dreamer. I'm also creative. And I also take risk when I see that, you know, the benefit can be quite great. And I think for where I'm at right now, there was no choice. There was no choice but to take that risk. It felt like everything that I had gone through as a person, as a professional, had led up to this one particular moment. And there were a series of things that had happened. And this is all recent, probably back in March or April, Good Black Art. And then I also had my corporate job, and there was like this moment where the corporate job just went away, let's just say. And then I had this beautiful opportunity. And so me, and it was either I throw that away and go back to my comfort zone, or take off with all these tools and all the support around me to flourish. And I chose to take that risk, take that opportunity, and run with it. And I haven't looked back. I told my therapist that I'm not a good swimmer, but right now I feel like I am an Olympic swimmer, and I'm just getting better and better and better and better. And I don't know when that's going to stop. I don't know if it's ever going to stop, but it just feels so right. And it's the first time that I've ever really shown up to work my full authentic self. Like all those things that we talked about, you know, being queer and being Black and being Southern, being international, being compassionate, being, you know, wanting to do something good for my community. I mean, these are things that have always been a part of me. And now I have all the tools, all the experience, all the background, all the education, all the support systems around me being like, this is it. So I just show up every day ready to be myself and pour every ounce of myself into this business and the community that we've built. So it's exciting. It's exhausting, but it's exciting.
I think what you're going through is expansion, where you're expanding into like a limitless version of you. Because I think when we're in our 20s, I think we learn the tools of the trade. We learn all the nitty gritty things. I think we need to be flexible into learning with that. A lot of kids these days, their early 20s, they think they could just do it right at the start. Sure, give it a try. I started my business when I was 35, 36. Exactly, mm-hmm. Like you. You started your business right at 35. And we had like a decade of business development, programming, contract, you know, like managing people. And all of those tools that we learned in corporate, we're taking it on. None of it is thrown away. Everything is useful, and everything is being reabsorbed into a cause that we believe in. I believe in beauty and mm-hmm. aesthetics my way. You believe in beauty and aesthetics and foundation and your past and your ancestry your way, and channeling that into meeting the moment and meeting and participating in the moment, not just standing by in the sidelines and like just watching history just kind of pass by. I was doing an interview yesterday, and I with my sister. I come from a long line of people. My family, we have always participated in history in some way, and it's I've only come to terms integrating all of that, my past, mm-hmm. my present, mm-hmm. my future, and stepping into the light in order to participate, just even participate, not just mm-hmm. participate, but move mountains. Do you feel mm-hmm. similar, like what's happening to you as well?
I feel exactly that way. It feels like all of the things that I was really insecure about and that I wanted to hide or run away from have become my superpower. And I am so eager to not only use that superpower, but like share it with every single person. And I have this sense of urgency. And this is, I mean, the core of good Black art is comes from like a very personal place, right? Like it comes from me growing up in a environment that was not conducive to what I was able to give, what I was able to create, what I was able to make. I had a lot of people around me supporting me, but they didn't have the tools or the words or the language to like coach me and to get me there. And there was no roadmap. I just had to figure it out. So my sense of urgency right now is I actually have all the tools. I have a roadmap, and I have access to all of these young Black creatives around the world. And I just want to share it with them, because my thinking is like, if you can figure out who you are and what your superpower is at 22 versus 32, imagine the change in your life. Imagine the decisions that you would make. Imagine how fast, you know, you would excel. Imagine what you could do in a year or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, just if you know that you have that superpower. So I'm not saying that like I regret anything that happened in my life where I would have made different decisions. But what I am saying is that the sense of urgency for me and why I am so enthusiastic about good Black art is I know what I know the power of someone who has quote unquote made it in quote unquote New York City, reaching out and encouraging you when you're in a small town in Georgia or in Colombia where there's no access to art, or a favela in Brazil. I mean, that's life changing. So that's the business that we're in, is identifying talent, nurturing that talent, and helping them change their life and find success, whatever success looks like. And that's the core of what we do. And of course, like, there's like beautiful aesthetics involved, and like there's a taste level involved, and it's cool. I mean, of course, all that stuff is there, but the core of it is really about making sure that these young Black kids know who the fuck they are and know that they have whatever it takes to make it. Because again, I didn't really, really know that until I was like 32 or 33. I knew it, but I didn't know it. So I just want to make sure that they truly understand their power.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like at 42, I'm still discovering who I am and myself every day. And it's a never ending journey. And it's a lot of, I would think that it's like peeling an onion, like peeling layers. And what the skin that I peel off, what's inside was like, oh, wait, that's there? Oh my God. All right. That's armor. Yeah, I can use that. Or, but it's like, you've got to, I think, I don't know, society has taught us how to hate ourselves or self-hate or doubt ourselves and everything. And it turns out that is probably why representation matters in media, because it's like you only see very specific types of people in media. Mm-hmm. So anything that doesn't fit in that, you kind of, who you are, your history, lost, your past is the thing to embrace, and not only embrace, but lead with that, you know, like lead with what you were born with, and then, you know, take it from there. Good Black art. What is your job role and how does it work?
Good Black Art is a global platform that is built by artists around the world. At the core of what we do is mentorship, equitable commerce, community, and we love really, really, really good art. So there's three parts to our business. Part number one is our virtual collabs. These are purely about access. Access in different ways. Firstly, there are a lot of emerging artists who are right at like that point in their career where they're about to take off. And it's really, really challenging to get available works from those artists. So we want to make sure that we are able to get our hands on some of those works for our collectors. And what we do is we have, you know, various set price points. So we'll perhaps do like a larger one-of-one unique acrylic on canvas piece, maybe a medium size. And then perhaps we'll do a small edition of prints. So again, we wanna provide access for our collectors with those artists that are really challenging to get their hands on. At the other side of the access spectrum, we want to provide works to our collectors who they didn't even know they needed to know who these artists are. Like artists that are just amazing and in the most random places in this world, but are fire. Because it's hard for, you know, some of these young creatives who are in places that don't even have a gallery. And if they do have a gallery, they're probably not going to be interested in art from a Black artist. So we want to make sure that we're providing a platform for them as well to participate in this industry. The second part of our business is my baby. It's called Narratives. Narratives is our media component, essentially. So we write roundups of art fairs, but we primarily focus on Black galleries, Black artists. We do profile pieces, interviewing, and we also have a video series called Good Talks, where I interview artists of various levels, where we have conversations about issues that are in our community, but we use art as a lens to have that conversation. That is really about providing more context, a platform that just sold works. Galleries do that. And, you know, no disrespect to galleries, but I really wanted to go a step further in allowing our collectors and our audience to truly engage and have conversations with our artists and learn who they are, what they do, and why they make the work that they do.
Sorry, you broke up. What were galleries doing? Sorry.
I was just saying that, you know, galleries, they sell work, right?
Yeah.
And we really want to go a step further. We want to sell work, but we also want to give context, and we want to really share the narrative of our artists.
And, 360.
Yeah, we want 360 because ultimately one of my goals is to switch the conversation from how much is that piece to who made that? Why did they make that? What's this about? And I think when we start having more human conversations about art, it doesn't really matter about like the commercial element, right? Like we're talking from human to human, and, you know, being able to collect one of those pieces is just the cherry on top. So we're a narrative first company. And the third part of our business is newer, primarily due to COVID. This is our partnerships and our exhibitions. So we know that while I love scale and I love the reach that we have with our online platforms and our e-commerce business, there's nothing like going into a space and seeing work and experiencing that in person. Like that's just something I can't ever replace virtually. So we you know, have to, you know, create those moments for our audience and collectors to engage. So we have partnerships. And the way I think about partnerships, this kind of goes back to my marketing days, is really thinking about intersectionality. When I was having lots of conversations with artists, I'd always ask, like, what's your goal? Like, where do you want to go? How can I help? I thought that they would all say that I want to be in a blue chip gallery. Most of them don't say that. They want to work, you know, with fashion brands. They want to work in film. They want to work in television. They want to work in various of lifestyle categories and different passion, have different passion points. So that was a huge turning point for me in the beginning, because I was like, oh, I have all this experience of working across brands in different sectors, and how can we connect them? So we recently did we had a conversation and presentation with a young artist named Audrey Lyle in collaboration with a luxury fashion boutique and meatpacking called Two Minds. It was a conversation around the intersection of fashion and art. And it was such an amazing event. It was a great exhibition. The works were beautiful that Audrey created. And it really opened up the doors for so many conversations with people in the fashion world who felt excluded from art, and vice versa. So I realized that this was a model that we really wanted to push heavy on. I am also, in the next couple of weeks, going to be announcing our first major exhibition in New York. It is going to be huge. It is so strong. It's a group show, 5 artists from all over. It's a very strong partnership with some major players in the art industry. So we are going into Q3 and Q4 really, really, really hot and excited to really think about, again, this 360 business from, you know, our virtual e-commerce platform, our media platform, as well as our in-person platform. We really want to be able to touch as many parts of the industry as possible, because You know, there's so many people out there who are eager to engage with art, but just haven't had the opportunity. So we're really tapping into those white spaces.
What is your percentage of people you reach out to? Is it first time collectors or long time collectors or a mix of both?
When we started Good Black Art, it was two major demographics. We had our Black emerging artists and our budding collectors. I really wanted to have a conversation primarily with an educational tone that was really the first touch point for our audience. What has happened in a short amount of time is that our audience is growing, and they're growing really fast. So what we're seeing is that clearly I'm very dedicated to the emerging space, but we're growing with our artists and we're growing with our collectors. So it's becoming a space that is the destination for Black contemporary art. Like, that's where we're going. And I don't mind to like put that out there into the universe, because I will always love my emerging artists. But my emerging artists are going to grow, and our collectors are too. So our collector base now is becoming quite advanced. We have seasoned collectors as well, with a lot of experience, and have some heavy hitters in their collections. We have collecting groups. I mean, it's a full spectrum on both sides. So we're really blessed to have been able to achieve so much in such a short amount of time. I mean, our 1 year anniversary is in 2 weeks. Wow. And, you know, we've built a pretty solid foundation, and I think we can officially say that we've taken off, and there's really no turning back at this point. We're remaining flexible and adapting to the fact that our growth is limitless.
So there is a market for good Black art.
There's a market. And I'd add that not only is there a market, there is... Because I think market feels so commercial. What I have found mostly is that people just want to have a conversation, and people want to learn, and people have always been perhaps attracted to the aesthetics of these gorgeous works, but no one's really taken the time to like have a conversation with artists. Like, no one's had like sat down and like had a conversation with collectors. No one's talked about, you know, the subject matter in these works and how that applies to our daily life. So that's why I always say, like, I don't really even think that I'm selling Black art, but I think that it's much bigger than that. Like, I'm sharing stories about our culture. We're having conversations about, you know, the challenges that we face, or the special moments that we have with our friends and our family. It's just like it's a bigger conversation than just selling work. And I think that ultimately will be our success, is that, you know, anyone can sell, like, you know, a gorgeous painting. It's not difficult if the talent is there. But it is challenging to have, you know, a really engaged community who I've never felt, you know, this kind of love from a bunch of strangers. It's crazy. I'm just like talking like I normally would. Like, this conversation is like me. It's not like this is like a new person, but it feels really, really good to be able to foster those conversations and spotlight beauty and like in all forms, like just to like spotlight beautiful things is like so cool. It's like the coolest thing ever. You're like, this is a good thing, and it's also pretty.
Why do you think I'm in the business I'm in?
I know.
I mean, you know,
I gotta say this because all the listeners need to hear. JJ is a little more experienced than me. You know, my older you know, but the good thing about that is I have had such great friends who also are mentors that I could follow, you know, you and Katrina and Jason and so many others. You know, y'all always had side hustles. Like, y'all always were working like multiple jobs with your corporate jobs and still going out and being social. And I was so lucky to be in this like really vibrant, creative, mature space that I got to see how each of you broke out and did your own thing in the way that you wanted to. So
Bill is talking about our group of friends in Hong Kong. And then
yeah, China. That's what it is. You yeah. know, that's how it was. I mean, I learned this, right? Like, and you know, to trust your gut and to break off and do things when the time was right. And yeah. I think you even told me one time, you're like, I was like, you know, I want to do something. I think we were in Palm Springs for your birthday, and you're like, I was like, I want to do something, and I don't know what it is. And you're like, you'll know when you know, and it will happen when it's supposed right. to happen. That's and it right. did, and it really, right. really did. So I have to give credit to you and to that amazing creative bunch of people, because I just had a lot of playbooks to take reference from.
I mean, if you see us surviving doing our shit, you could do it. I mean, honestly. And in a lot of ways, I like the way that you mentioned that you talk to people in your events the way you're talking to me now, which is your natural voice. Like, it's your natural, because in corporate, we have corporate speak. When we're in a corporate event, we're not representing ourselves, we're representing the company. And I remember this really well because I did corporate for 10 years. And right. the greatest thing about running my own design studio is when I go in at the pitch and make a presentation, I talk like me. It is me. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a bit of professionalism, but mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, the job is so much easier when you've got all of yourself behind your back, you know, and mm-hmm. without having to be like corporate speak or corporate this, corporate that. And I think a lot of ways when you're running your own hustle, mine with my studio and you with GBA, I think it's so much easier if it's your own thing.
I agree with you, JJ.
Energetically easier.
I remember having a conversation with my last boss, who I love to death and appreciate a lot of the guidance she gave to me. But in every view I had, she kept saying that, she's like, you got to be your authentic self. Like, when you read a presentation, like, I lose you. And she's like, but when you're one-to-one with me and you're kicking it, like, it's you. She's like, you got to figure out a way to do it. And I realized that for better or worse person, when I was going to work and presenting things that I didn't care about or love, it always felt flat. So I knew I had to figure out, again, something. And I knew I had to find, you know, my own voice. But yeah, it's been a really great experience to finally be able to freely
and when you're running your own thing, you're helping people out, you're working in your element of beauty and aesthetics and your culture and history, you can be present. Because my issue with corporate, it was like, a lot of the times it was an out-of-body experience. When you're in that meeting room and you're having to make a presentation about bullshit work, you're like, I'm there. I'm literally talking to you, the client, but my soul is not there. Like, I'm literally in outer space, like having an out-of-body experience. So another boss of mine was telling me the same thing. It's like, where were you? Like, I was there, but I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I wasn't present. Quickly, name me two artists that really fascinate you from your roster and why.
Oh,
only JJ, two. I know. And I'm not saying it's your favorite, because we don't do favorites. A mom loves all her kids the same. But like, just, you know, what are the two artists we should really keep an eye on? that you've come across with Good Black Heart?
Here's how I'm going to answer that. I'm going to be super like, this is like Phil PC, because I have a lot of, little brothers and sisters who are.
Okay. Why don't you just run through all of them
for me? Oh Lord. I mean, we'll be here forever.
I know.
What I will say though, is that right now I do have a few places and spaces that I'm really, really fascinated with. You know, I always say, if you name a theme, if you name an issue, if you name a particular environment or a place, then I can run off like a million names. But, you know, right now I'm very interested in our international artists. We have Black artists from Brazil and Colombia, Japan, France. I mean, you name it, everywhere else in between. I'm very fascinated with these artists, and particularly because, myself included, Black Americans a lot of the time prioritize ourselves when we talk about struggles and racism and the challenges that we have because of our skin. But what we don't realize is that this is happening in a lot of places in the world in very different ways. So I'm very fascinated about the parallels, but also the differences that we have. And I think there's a lot of like opportunity to learn what's happening from a race perspective in different places. I'm also really fascinated with queer Black artists. I would say this is, you know, definitely more personal. But I, at 36 years old, am still learning who I am and my comfort level with my identity, and whether it would be with sex, or whether it's with attraction, or my appearance, or relationships. These are things that, you know, I am still dealing with, and will probably always deal with. So a lot of the time when I'm working with artists or curating, I do pull in those like personal moments and those personal things that I'm personally dealing with. So, you know, it's again, it's a form of like healing and therapy. But again, learning is always going to be that like that through line. I'm also very, 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 very fascinated and excited about a lot of the work that young Black women are doing right now in the space. I looked at my own collection probably 2 years ago, and the good thing is that it reflected me and my journey. But then I realized that there was a lot of Black men on the walls. And I was like, where are Black women? Clearly Black women have been a part of my life in every form, and that needs to be represented. So I, you know, make a great effort to showcase narratives by Black women, because they're telling stories that perhaps their mothers or grandmothers couldn't tell. And they are powerful and really important. So I'm really mostly fascinated with artists who can teach. That's the secret sauce to my curation, is what is the educational moment. You know, if I'm learning, that's fantastic, but I really want to give other people the opportunity to really learn as well.
So would you consider this job, and you mentioned it briefly, is this job healing for you? Is this job helping you in your integration?
I've always liked efficiency. Like I've always been a huge fan of it, but this job does so many things. I mean, this job, you know, allows me to provide for myself. It allows me to do good for our community. It allows me to learn. It allows me to heal. It allows me to connect the world. I mean, there's just so many like constant parallels that I'm able to do so many things that I'm very grateful for, to be honest, because as you get older, there's more responsibilities, there's more things to do. And I think that a lot of the time we forget ourselves. And with my corporate job, you know, you know, it's someone else's dream, it's someone else's money, it's someone else's objectives, business objectives. But with good Black art, it's like having a conversation about a particular piece of work is going to enrich my life, like, period. So I'm always learning. I'm always bettering myself. Like, that's the only way I can really put it. Like, I always feel better when I go to sleep. And when I wake up the next morning, I feel better. When I go to my therapist, I have like a million stories and insights that I've gained because of interactions that I've had through conversations about art. So I feel better. I feel like a better person. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your questions, but.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel better. I mean, the last question I always ask my guests is, what do you do for yourself to align on a day-to-day basis? Mm-hmm. But it seems like the job is what aligns you on a day-to-day basis.
It is. It does align me. But what I mean, I have to be totally transparent. I'm 4 months into doing good Black art full time. And that transition is a very tough transition. And, you know, anyone who's ever started something new, but specifically started a business financially, mentally, there's imposter syndrome, there's balancing of time. How do you make this transition with a partner? Obviously, there's a lot of other things in your personal life that are still orbiting, family, children, etc. And I would say that I am learning all of those things. I am also lowering my expectations. I feel like when I was in my 20s, I could go to Bali for a week and not look at my emails. And that was amazing. And I sometimes think like, well, I want to do that, but I can't do that. So like, this is horrible. But what I'm trying to find now are like, what are those little moments that are my Bali? Whether that is going on a walk without my phone, or being in a group chat, talking shit with your friends for a moment, or reading a chapter in a book before you go to bed. And it never is the same for me right now. Like, I don't have like a consistent moment, but I try to take any moment I can get and be grateful for that moment on that day. So for example, today I took a break and I did 100 push-ups. And that was that was all I could do today. And I'm grateful for those 20 minutes that I got to do those 100 push-ups. So I also respect anyone who starts a business. It is the craziest, hardest thing in the world. There are tears, there are breakdowns regularly, but you know, you do have to take those moments for yourself. And I'm aware that, you know, I don't want to get burnt out on something that I love. So
you gotta take a pause. If you're a business owner, there's no boundary potentially, except for the pauses you take. So you're the man. You're the number one. All the road and all decisions start with you, ends with you.
I'm a boss.
You're the boss. You're a boss. And as someone who has been doing this for like 7 years, yeah, you gotta take a pause. You gotta find meaningful ways to just step away from it briefly. But you know, there is no turning off WhatsApp or Messenger or whatever. And then eventually you'll have to delegate. And and you gotta trust people, but you gotta hire the best people to be around you, collaborators and whatnot. Can people around the world purchase from GB Good Black Art?
Yes, we ship worldwide, JJ. Oh, wow. So okay. you can visit us at on Instagram at Good Black Art. That's where we are. On our website, we have goodblackart.com. That is where we have all of our works for purchase. As well as our media components. So Good Talks and Narratives are also housed there. And that's also where you can find out the latest on our upcoming events and exhibitions. Again, in the next couple of weeks, there's a few big announcements, which we're super, super, super excited about, and also why I'm super, super exhausted. But it's going to be a really, really exciting fall and winter, and frankly speaking, beyond. So we do ship worldwide. And of course, collectors and world, come join us. We're happy to have our community.
Great. So we'll log on to your website and then we'll go follow your Instagram page. And we are going to have all of those links on the liner notes. If you're interested in good black art, even great black art, you got to log on to www.goodblackart.com. And learn more about these amazing artists from all around the world, learn their stories, and buy some amazing works online. Yes. And if you're in New York City, go check out this cool new stuff, events that you're going to be hosting in the next few months. Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Phil.
Yes, thank you.
It was so great to touch base again, especially within, you know, the podcast context, because Phil and I, we, you know, shoot the shit, vacation together back in the day, drink like crazy, and hopefully those days will come again soon.
I know, soon. And, well, thank you, Jason, for having me. I am always so grateful to have you as a friend, but also, again, as a mentor. Again, I'm so lucky to have had some hacks and some roadmaps from you, and so happy and proud of everything that you're doing, because you're also killing it.
Yeah, I know. It's so crazy. Okay, anyway, have a great day, everybody. Get yourself some good black art, and we'll see you in the next podcast episode. Bye-bye.
Aligned by Design was brought to you by Archipelago Media, a division of Archipelago Limited, Hong Kong. Our amazing theme music was composed for us by Ollie Shelton, a Brighton-based composer, producer, and pianist specializing in ambient, electronic, and alternative music. He is half of the UK duo Pella and works alongside a range of up-and-coming artists and established acts around the globe. You may contact him on Instagram at @O_S_music. That's @O_S_music and OllieSheltonMusic.com. You may contact me on Instagram at JJ.ACUNA. That's @JJ.Acuna. We thank our guests and partners of the podcast. And as always, take the time to align by your very own design, whatever that may be.